Well, it's that magical time of year again. The pollen is here.
Oh, man. Look, somebody posted a picture in one of the Discords yesterday of somebody chopping down a pine tree and the pollen just staying when the tree fell, like a huge green cloud.
In a tree-like shape.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you, I looked at it and it felt immediate dread and wanted to sneeze just from seeing it. I don't know about you, but when I moved out here, I didn't have allergy problems for like 10 years until we had the drought. And then post-drought, the stuff that's grown back has blown me out in a way that is unbelievable.
Mutant, like offensive vegetation.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I realize I said post-drought, but I mean, I realize we're not after the drought. We're still in the drought, but like there was a brief period where it rained for like 2 years, and then it started droughting again. So anyway.
We're just in a constant cycle of less drought and more drought.
Yeah, it's like what's on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is the least drought and 10 is the most drought. How drought are you?
I don't want to think about it. I had some allergies in North Carolina before I moved out here, but it definitely got worse here. In fact, like that sinus surgery I had a couple of years ago was a downstream effect of years of nasal inflammation that I'm sure mostly came from allergies.
It turns out having your nasal lining constantly flamed up is not great.
Under assault.
It's funny. The other thing that is bad, like where we live, most people don't have central air, right? I don't know. I feel like we've talked about this on other podcasts, but like it is coastal temperate here. It's what the climate range we're in is called.
Classically, yes. Ideally, yes. Maybe by modern standards, not as much, but
yeah, it's transitioning away from that. It seems like,
let's say there have been some modifications in recent years, but yeah, you're right. Like, I don't think people understand that live in, you know, like we're both from the East Coast where you kind of have to have air conditioning or you'll like melt
yeah.
in summer. Not only no central air, we don't even have, like, this apartment doesn't even have ceiling fans. There's nothing in here.
Well, yeah, we don't have, like, we keep windows open about 200 days a year, probably. Like, yeah. there's 3 months from, like, the end of December to the end of March where we usually don't have windows open. And then sometime in April, they usually get opened up. Like, our windows were all open, have been open for the last week or so. And it's really nice. But it makes the house dusty, too. And, mm-hmm. like, I also wonder how much of it is that just we're not exposed to, you know, filtered air courtesy of your central air forced, you know, the 100 micron filter you put on your furnace every month, right?
Yes. There may have been a contentious conversation, let's say, here yesterday about whether we should open the windows or not because it was 80 degrees in the living room. But
was it warmer outside at that point?
I think they'd probably reached some degree of equilibrium.
Okay.
I don't know, but yeah, I mean, it's a constant fight right now of like, we need cool air to come in, but not the pollen.
Okay, so I want to talk about this. What's your keeping the house cool strategy then? Because I grew up poor in rural Tennessee. We didn't have air conditioning for most of my youth.
Yeah.
So it was just 90 degrees in the house all the time because it got hot where we lived.
Right.
And I'm curious, like I understand cross ventilation. I understood cross ventilation at a very young age and knew that like in the summertime, you got to sleep with your bedroom door open because otherwise air doesn't move through the house and everyone suffers. Right.
Right. Yeah. We had air put in, I think when I was like 10 or something, but my dad never let us use it. So we also did a lot of cross ventilation.
Yeah.
We were not allowed to turn the air conditioning on without permission, which was rare.
When we got the big box, it had to be real hot. Even when they got air conditioning put in the house when I was in middle school, probably.
Oh, you know,
or high school.
What we had back then was an exhaust fan that we use.
Oh, like a big central one in the central hallway or something?
Yes.
Yeah, we had one of those.
Yeah.
I don't think it did anything, Brad.
Not really.
No.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So I've got my whole allergy regimen here, though, now to try to manage. I've got like a daily Allegra.
Oh, yeah.
Flonase as needed.
Uh-huh.
Nasal rinse twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
The whole regimen.
I was a cetirizine guy for a long time, but now I just suffer.
Let's see. Hang on. Let me see if I can. Okay. Allegra is that phenofexidine?
I look. Cetirizine is Zyrtec, I think. I can't remember.
Fexofenadine, I believe. Anyway. Well, hey. Soon we won't need to worry about this stuff because I mean, I think you saw they are using AI to produce medication.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that soon we wouldn't need this because all of the trees would die. Yours is maybe more grim. I don't know.
A confluence of factors is approaching, but or do you trust? Would you take computer created medications?
So people took that story. So you're talking about the story where they were like, hey, we fed AI. We fed a chemical generation compound to AI and told it, hey, don't do these things because they're dangerous. And then it exclusively did those things and generated like 40,000 new carcinogens and toxins.
All it did was produce thousands of new chemical weapons.
Yeah. So, I mean, realistically, that's not that far from how the pharmacological industry worked for the first like 100 years of its existence.
Cool.
Because you would just have some chemist in a lab and they would be synthesizing weird new compounds and then they'd pump them into animals to see which ones made the animals sick and which ones made them better.
Good.
So, like, you know, march of progress. I don't know. That seems pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Good old empirical rigor.
Yeah. Welcome to Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
I'm Brad.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I've got my blue light on and everything. It's rise and shine.
I know. Like I always feel like when I talk to you in the morning, it's like your blue period because you do have like normally your shot is very warm and like inviting. I'm like, oh man, I haven't seen the pigs in a long time. You know, I see Anakin back there getting ready to kill a bunch of kids. Yeah. And yeah.
Yes, place of honor on my wall.
Did you see that Lego Star Wars video yesterday? Yes,
the infinite yes. Anakin juggle.
The infinite, yeah, it was very Devil May Cry.
Is it child? I didn't look closely enough. Is it child Anakin specifically that they are juggling?
It's just a random kid. So it's like it's the normal video game rules where you can kill all the adults, but the kids are invulnerable. It seems like
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was Anakin. Interesting. Okay.
No. Well, I think Anakin was doing. It was maybe Qui-Gon doing the juggle. Maybe it was Anakin. I don't know. I just assumed it was the kid.
Very
role.
In character for him.
Yeah. To be invulnerable.
No. To be slashing kids with lightsaber.
Well, yeah, but also his legs stayed on. If the kid was him, his legs and arms stayed on. So I don't think that is in character. Actually.
Sure. Yes.
What are we talking about today? What's going on?
The latest and greatest news: the Apple event that happened like a month ago.
Well,
No. It's just that's a starter. It's a conversation starter.
Yeah, really. Like we've had some new devices come into our lives, new things come into our lives, yeah. and we haven't talked about them.
Well, some new devices. Look,
I've learned not to expect anything when you say you're getting ready to buy something.
It's time.
Hey, how's your new Kindle? Is it pretty good?
It's on the hovering over the order button for like 2 weeks. I missed that 24-hour sale and now I can't bring myself to do it.
If only there was some way to know how long the sale was going to run.
It didn't say anything. It's just experience kind of has opened my eyes to the very mercurial nature of Amazon price drops. Like they really just come and go like nothing. Like, do you think actually this made me wonder? So a Kindle is $140 normally. It was $105 when I happened to realize, oh, I might want a new Kindle.
Yeah.
And then by the time the next morning that I got around to ordering it, it had gone back up.
Do you think they had like 3% too many in a warehouse someplace?
That was exactly my question/assumption is those price adjustments are probably just happening algorithmically at this point, right?
I don't know. I mean, I like to think that there's someone involved in that chain. So, hey, if you're on the Amazon pricing side, I'd be curious to know. So the way this used to work, I know how this worked like 15 years ago, because we worked with Amazon for a little while at Maximum PC. And like they would bring when they started their PC store and when they decided they wanted to compete with Newegg and started their PC store, they brought us in. And it's probably been long enough I could talk about this without getting in trouble. But they had like a team of people who were like, here's what we should be focusing on. Here's the good hardware that people are going to want to buy in different like price categories and different kind of markets. Here's what we're going to focus on. And we're only going to buy stuff in. We're only going to actually sell the stuff that people are going to like. The high volume stuff is what they were looking at. The interesting thing was they were making those decisions like quantitatively themselves. So like they were bringing in outside reviewers, they were doing work on that stuff. But then like literally there was a room in the Amazon skyscraper in Seattle that was filled with dudes testing PC hardware.
Huh.
And like they were testing it for hey, does this CPU, does this motherboard have pieces that are going to fall off and cause a lot of returns and stuff like that too? Like, it was really interesting.
That's a way more intensive process than I would have expected from them. Although I'm sure things have changed.
I feel like that was probably a pilot process for a weird category that was unlike anything they'd gotten into up until that point. Cause like the thing that they realized quickly was selling computer parts was very different than selling like laptops off the shelf. And I think this was like the Rev 2 as a result of that. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is, we're going to talk today about some new Apple stuff and then some Apple stuff that we've also been testing. Because you've gotten your Mac 1, your M1 MacBook Pro.
I've spent a good chunk of time with this new M1-based Mac. You've got AirPods stuff going on. There's like, I'm probably going to buy that new iPhone SE. But
yeah,
the more interesting part is what that iPhone presages for a 5G millimeter wave.
Yeah, I mean, is it though?
I think so. Well, do you want to just get into it?
Let's just go.
We're stumbling all over our notes here, but
yeah, I don't think 5G has been impactful at all. Like, I think the impact of 5G is reducing congestion and getting better throughput across the network and making the network more reliable.
Also, it's interesting. Let's get into this. Okay, I mean, first of all, just to get the basics out of the way, it's the new iPhone SE looks just like the previous one, which looks just like the iPhone 8 and 7. It's that same form factor.
It's the one with the button on the front.
Yeah, it's the last home button standing.
Yeah.
It's got an A15 in it, which is the current SoC in the 13. It's got 4 gig of RAM. Like, it's very nice. Same camera, same optics in the camera.
But only one lens, right? You don't have the cluster.
Yes, that's what. The same
one. Optics as the old.
Yes, as the other phones that look just like this. But it does.
To me is the big problem with this phone.
It's a little bit of a bummer. That's the one thing I wish was better. It does do more of the post processing because it has the better compute.
Yeah, does it do the night, like the night stuff and the macro, it turns out, are the things that I've used most on my 13, probably.
Okay.
Like, telephoto is good because I have a kid. I don't think that really applies to you, but the macro, like, you could take some dope pig shots with the wide angle and the macro.
I don't think it does any of that stuff.
Yeah.
I think, like I said, it'll do the digital post-processing stuff. I think you probably need better lenses and sensors for stuff you're talking about anyway.
Like, the idea of buying for me, the camera is a big reason I upgrade phones.
Yeah.
So the idea of being stuck on an old camera is a bummer for me.
I get it. Like I said, that's the one thing I kind of wish was better, but I also just don't care about phones enough to
there is that.
Chase features. I just want something cheap that is fast and good and is going to last a while. And this is that.
There you go.
And it has 5G. And that's actually the thing I wanted to talk about here is there's this. I read the story on The Verge about, I had no idea about what's been going on with Verizon and 5G.
Oh, we talked about it a little bit late last year, early this year, where the rolling out the second wave of 5G stuff that uses the actual spectrum that will help was blocked by the FAA because of the interference with, I think, ground approach radar or something.
Yes. So that that spectrum has finally been approved for use for 5G by phones. But the thing I didn't understand or didn't realize is that Verizon has been forcing phone makers to shove millimeter wave capability into every handset that Verizon will carry.
Well, yeah. And the millimeter, like, I've had, I think, two generations of phone now that use the millimeter wave stuff. And
how many times have you had a millimeter wave signal?
Literally none. So I even went and drove so in San Francisco, last time I went on a hunt for this, the area that is covered is a thin strip of Market Street from the Embarcadero basically down to Van Ness. So it's 15 blocks, 12 blocks. It's only on this main thoroughfare. It didn't work when I was inside the car riding because the glass was enough to block it.
That's amazing.
Right.
I don't understand how a technology this flawed actually made it into production and distribution implementation.
Look, they didn't have a better alternative and they needed a reason for 5G to be better and they needed a way to make the benchmarks look good.
That is exactly the gist of this Verge story that I read. But so the thing I didn't realize, though, is that Verizon has literally been refusing to carry any phone from anybody that doesn't support millimeter wave.
That's typical carrier bullshit.
So let me see. There's a part in here about the Verizon pushed Google to create a version of its budget Pixel 4a 5G that cost $100 more just to satisfy the carrier's ridiculous demand. That phones support barely their millimeter wave. The Verizon version of Samsung's Galaxy S20 had less RAM and no micro SD expansion, so they could fit millimeter wave 5G. They've been compromising phones, and like it for a feature that is practically worthless for most people.
So is this only for phones that were sold in the Verizon store, or is this for phones to connect to the Verizon network?
I think it's only phones that Verizon would sell directly is the gist I got from this. I assume.
Yeah, that's fine then. Who cares? Like I fundamentally don't like if Verizon wants to sell a more expensive, crappier phone in their store, which I'm going to try to avoid buying from for the rest of my life as long as I can, because it's always a bad experience.
Well, totally. I mean, but you are. Like, but I assume plenty of people still buy phones through their carrier, though.
I'd be really curious to see what the data on that is like in a post Apple. The Apple recharge program or whatever thing world. I would bet that they have seen a dramatic decrease in iPhone sales post that, which is why Apple has the leverage to say, yo, we're just not going to do this because it's stupid. Anyway.
Yeah. So this thing, so the SE does not support millimeter wave out of the box, but it sounds like that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But it does support C-band is this kind of mid-range spectrum on 5G, which is the actual good one.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, it still seems like it's just marginally faster than 4G. It's just there's more of the 5G for everyone that's connected to a node. So you're sharing less. Your slices are bigger, basically.
Yeah, I don't know. The story describes C-band as a best of both worlds chunk of radio spectrum with far longer range than millimeter wave and far better speeds than low band 5G.
Whoa.
Speaking of, man, phones just getting wild over here.
My phone just went buck wild. I'm sorry.
Phone is ready to party.
I was looking something up for the next segment.
It sounds like, at least according to them, like the C-band is the kind of sweet spot for 5G to actually perform and be available at the same time.
But so this is why I was worried when people were talking about 5G revolutionizing video games and nonsense like that last year and the year before. And the takeaway is that 5G is a carrier, is an upgrade for carriers, not for you. Like, users see marginal increase, carriers see a massive increase in capacity and ability to deal with more congested networks, but not in a way that's going to impact. Like, if you move from a 4G, when you move from a 3G to a 4G phone, it felt like you had broadband in your pocket.
It was like stepping into the future.
Yeah. When you move from a 4G phone to a 5G phone, it's going to work a little bit better in places where the 4G is probably not great.
I believe it. Like, I've seen screenshots of people's speed tests out there, and it's like, yes, okay, now you're getting like, what, 200 megabits down instead of 140 or something like that. But
And you'll also get a better speed when you're in a high, like, it, say you go to a Giants game and you're in a ballpark with 50,000 people, you're going to have a better cellular connection there than you would have with 4G.
Oh, yeah. Having spent years at E3 with phones that are effectively useless, like, that's, you know, there's something to that. There's value there for sure.
But like, E3 was fine as soon as we hit 4G stuff.
Yeah,
for me.
Yes, it was better.
I never had problems.
It was better for sure.
So you're gonna buy one?
I was already so I can actually get $100 for my iPhone 8 off of an SE, which, like, the prices,
you should do that.
It's what is it? $429, $479, $579 are the size prices.
Yeah.
And I can get $100 off by trading in the older phone that looks identical. Like, it's very tempting to just get this fast ass but old looking phone.
You have a 4-year-old phone now, 5-year-old phone?
How old is the 8? 2018, I think. About four years ago.
It'll be 4 years this September,
it's
probably.
It's starting to get a little clunky. Like, the battery battery is down to like 90% capacity, and like, the overall responsiveness is not what it was, I will say.
Does it have like the wireless charging and all that stuff, or no?
Yeah.
It does?
It does.
Okay. Yeah, the wireless charging is like, honestly, the camera and the wireless charging, two of the bigger upgrades for me.
Yeah, that's fair. Anyway, I probably am still going to just get an SE and forget about having a phone again for another 3 years. But
there you go.
But that Unreal Reality Scan app came out earlier this week, which requires LiDAR that the SE does not have. And I was like,
So these apps have been around for a long time. Like, Scandi Pro that's what just made the noise a minute ago. Scandi Pro has been around since the depth camera came out on the phones years ago. Reality Scan is neat. Reality Scan is using the depth camera to position the camera in 3D space, it seems like, to do photogrammetry, not necessarily to like use the LiDAR to scan, because the depth camera to scan, because the depth camera is pretty low res. but as a way to position the camera so it knows exactly where the shot was taken in relation to the object and yada yada.
Yeah, I just mean it's a prerequisite, you know.
It's pretty neat. Like the reality scanner thing is pretty neat. I spent some time fooling with it yesterday and shot three or four models worth of stuff.
I've got one of your models right here in front of you. I mean, we haven't actually said what that app does. So I was not familiar with Sketchfab, but I gather that's a place people put 3D models.
Sketchfab is a place you can share 3D models with each other. I think they use a credit system to upload to determine what's uploaded and shared. But they also will do. So I don't know where the math is happening to crunch the photogrammetry into a 3D mesh. I assume that's happening on the reality scan side, but it might actually be on the Sketchfab side. But yeah, so I did it yesterday. I took a Lego Boba Fett spaceship Lego version that I built years ago, and I put it up on a boxed up new set of sheets because it was the right height and about the right size. And then I shot about 150 photos around it, and sent it up to the elves in the cloud to turn into a model. And it did a reasonably good job on the areas that I focused on.
Did okay. I will say that. I think we still have not fully described this app. It's the pipeline that they are proposing is that this is a way to get real world objects into the Unreal Engine as in-game assets. As 3D models.
That's not realistic, though.
No, so that's the thing is the video they put out. The video they put out has kind of a demo sequence of a lady shooting kind of a nice looking leather easy chair with this app.
That would probably work pretty well.
And then dropping it into in game and it looks perfect. And I have not seen a single example of people actually trying this thing that looks anywhere near what they depict in this video.
So we did a Fusho episode where we used a bunch of reality capture stuff to put assets into the game. We did some laser scanning. We did some photogrammetry. We did a bunch of other stuff. It seems like this is using, like I said, photogrammetry, which is where you take a bunch of photos and the computer is like, okay, this pixel on this one is this pixel on this one. And it's able to infer depth from the from hundreds and hundreds of photos.
Is it all just based on the photos? It's not recording any depth?
Well, it's recording the position of the camera.
Okay.
So, and the photos. So it positions, when you load up the app, it actually generates and you start taking pictures. It actually shows you where the pictures were taken in 3D space around the overlaid on top of the 2D picture from the camera.
So it has no actual like 3D data, no depth data that describes like the contours of the object itself.
Well, no, the depth data. I mean, it is not transparent how the application actually works.
Okay.
It appears to be capturing a bunch of photos. My guess is it's using the depth data as a second tier data source rather than the primary source seems to be the photos.
Okay.
And that's the reason I can tell that is I tried to scan a white mouse and a black mouse. The black mouse worked fine. The white mouse was too reflective and the mesh was all lumpy and collapsed where the highlights on the photos were. And that shouldn't have happened I wouldn't think that would have happened with the depth sensor.
Yeah. And anyway, this stuff is neat. I don't know if it's like buy a more expensive phone that I otherwise don't care about neat.
So like you are a perfect example of a person that I would say should buy whatever the best one is at the moment because you keep things for so long.
Right. And well, that's why the SE is so appealing because internally it is the best one. It matches the same, you know, flagship iPhone. Yeah, except
the camera stuff. Like, look, I realize that you have a attachment to the button and don't like notches.
I like the button.
Weird, almost fetishistic way.
I like Touch ID has never failed me. But again, though, the bigger thing is I just don't care that much about phones these days.
I mean, that's the thing.
Working from home, I just don't use the phone much.
Yeah, there is that. The phone remains my primary computer, right, even though I work at home.
Right. Like that's true for a ton of people. And for them, obviously, a better phone is more sensible.
Yeah.
But it's just a thing to have when I go out of the house to enable basic communication.
You should just get an Apple Watch and put cellular on it. You don't even need a phone.
Oh, man. Just go full Dick Tracy.
Just go full Dick Tracy. Well, so I think you should order that phone now so that you get it sometime in the next 2 years. Because I want to hear about how
actually,
it is.
I mean, that's a whole other thing.
I wasn't talking about their pipeline.
Okay. Well, they have same day delivery. Like if you can order an iPhone online and they will deliver it that day.
There you go.
These days. So I
think that's only in the city. I don't get that.
Yeah, I'm sure. I was going to say, I'm sure that's somebody literally embarking from an Apple store.
I'm sure that they're contracting with DoorDash or someone
I'm not going to do that. But
should we talk about the Mac Studio a little bit?
They announced the Mac Studio, which let's see, I described it as a Mac not so mini.
Yeah, it's like a chunky Mac. Like a
very, very thick Mac mini.
Yeah, it weighs 8 pounds. I was kind of surprised.
I wonder what they're machining the Is it still aluminum?
Yeah, it's all aluminum. The reviews are out. Like, the people actually have them. They reviewed really, really well. People were really stoked about them. And then they got out in the real world and people started kind of sharing feedback on where they're strong and where they're weak. It seems like the CPU perf is incredible, as you would expect, especially on native apps. So yeah. It uses the new ARM, Apple ARM M1 processor.
M1 Ultra is basically... Well,
Max and Ultra. There's two versions.
Oh, you can get a Max version, right?
Yeah, Max version is... The Ultra one is like $7,000. The Max one is probably the one for most people to get, unless you're like a content creator.
So like the Mac Studio is kind of interesting to me, but the roadmap for Apple ARM CPUs is the thing that's actually interesting to me. And that, like, a lot of people, I'm reading the rumors leading up to this event, a lot of people were expecting the M2 to debut here, and it did not.
I would say that the people who expected that probably don't understand the difficulties of chip production.
Well, no. It's coming. Like, the rumors peg it as soon. It's just, will it be here or will it be a WWDC? But the current understanding from like analysts is that the M2 will debut this year, but in the MacBook Air, like, they're going to do the same thing they did before.
Yeah.
This is what I was going to say about the M1 is they keep adding new tiers to the M1, right? Like, it was just the M1 for like a year, and then they rolled out the Pro and Max with the new MacBook Pros, and then they just rolled out the Ultra with the Studio. It sounds like they're going to do the same thing again, where the M2 will start as just the low tier MacBook Air part, and then they'll probably scale it up from there again.
Yeah, there's two ways to do this. One is the way that the GPU manufacturers do, which is where they roll out the high end part, and then they roll out lower end parts when they have chips that don't fab, that don't pass. When they bin them coming out of the fab and they have like 30% of units on the chip dead, then they'll say, okay, well, we have a cheaper chip that has 30% fewer shader engines, blah, blah, blah. Here's how much this costs. Apple has traditionally gone the other direction, where they start at the low end and then they add stuff on as they lock down the process and they get the fab working and all that. Cause like the M1, the M1 Max and the M1 Ultra are basically, one unit, two units, four units, right? In the CPU model. Like they're just gluing more of them together. There's nothing. There's high speed interconnects and stuff like that. It's not as simple as just making the chip bigger.
Right.
But literally that's the gist of what's happening.
But the same basic architecture,
inside the silicon. Right. Yeah. Same chips. Just more. It's there's no fundamental changes in clocks and stuff like that. It's just more silicon. As a result, that M1 Ultra chip is stupid big. Like, it is really, really large because it's GPU, CPU, all on one ASIC. It's ridiculous.
Have you looked at any teardowns of the Studio? Like, how much of that thing is just heatsink, I wonder?
It's well, the performance per watt's still pretty good because, like you, if you think about what an ARM processor generates in terms of MIPS per watt, like, it's not high, right? Even at desktop clock speeds. So, like, the one thing people have said about the Studios is that they're not loud. And the CPU perf has been really good. Like, people are really stoked at how the CPUs are performing, especially, obviously it's mostly on native apps when you get into Rosetta and start, you know, converting from different architectures, things get a little less efficient.
What if you dogmatically refused to install Rosetta 2?
Well, we're going to get to that in a minute, because I have some real questions about the usability of a Mac M1 without Rosetta installed.
I can speak to that.
The thing that shocked me is I was reading a bunch of people who are actually doing firsthand reviews, and No Film School, who does pretty good practical reviews of stuff. They're not, they don't do a ton. I mean, they do benchmarks, but they also look at it as, okay, if I spend X numbers of dollars more, how much time is this going to save me as a professional video editor? They were like, look, the difference between the high end and the cheap one is kind of inconsequential for video renders, because the video renders are already really accelerated and are already really fast. So you save like a minute on a 2 hour video render, 2 minutes on a 2 hour video render. Who cares? Right.
Yeah.
And the other thing that came up, and MKBHD talked about this on his video a fair amount. The GPU kind of sucks compared to like a dedicated desktop. Like, if you're doing workstation workloads that require like 3090s, 3080s, like high end 400 watt, you know, two power supply, giant fan GPUs, the thing in the studios is not going to cut the mustard for you.
That's really not that surprising. I mean,
look, this is the normal Apple thing, right? Hey, we have a high-end workstation. Like if you look at the last Mac Pro, the whatever the one with the wheels was that you could spec out to be $60,000.
Wait, was that the last one?
That was the last one.
I thought the trash.
There was the trash can. Then there was the baby cheese grater. And oh, now right. there's
I
this
forgot.
One.
I forgot they brought the cheese grater back.
Yeah, they brought the cheese grater back for like 6 months.
Mac Pro is so hard to keep up with for some reason to me.
Like, here's my fundamental ask. Unless you really have to work on Mac on OS X, like the Mac Pro, Mac Studio line always is a bad choice. You're going to get a much, much more hardware at much lower cost that's much more capable for spending and spend a lot if you go with a Windows machine. Yes. You can't run OS X.
Yeah.
Also, OS 11.
I mean, I guess we're just trying to read tea leaves here, but I wonder if ARM is ever coming to the Mac Pro line.
No, this is the new Mac Pro line.
The Studio, you think?
Studio, Mac Pro, the Mac Pro is dead.
That was going to be my question is this Mac Studio actually what you're going to get if you're looking for a new Mac Pro?
This is the new Mac Pro.
You think so?
100%.
You literally think the product line, the branding is gone?
I think that the Mac Pro is a moribund product line at this point, and we will not see more Mac Pros for the foreseeable future.
I mean, I guess it was never like a massive revenue driver or like volume mover for
them,
right?
There was a period of time that it was.
Well, I mean way back when, but I mean,
yeah, 10, more 15 recently, years ago.
Right. Like more recently, it's probably just not worth their profit margins at this point, right?
I think it's a thing that they continue to build hardware in because they need that. They need it's like why does Ford make a luxury car? They don't sell very many of them, but they need that market line because they need to I don't know, they need to sell something in it to everybody else. I don't know why they continue to make these other than they have a bunch of people who do video editing. This is a computer that exists so Pixar can buy them, right?
Sure.
Pixar and Disney buy these computers. Sure. It seems like I don't. Yeah, it seems like a lot of money and a lot of effort to. I mean, the benefit of this is it's pushing the silicon forward, and they're seeing how big the chips can scale, which is, I guess, a good thing.
It's an interesting experiment or exercise. Yeah. I think,
like for me, the M1 stuff is much more interesting on the mobile side because there the benefits of ARM really shine.
Yes, for sure.
Which is a segue.
This is, yes, you're right. I started to digress and then I had to stop myself because, like, you know, there's stuff going on with Intel and AMD right now that's kind of interesting, but that's probably out of scope for this episode.
I don't think Apple cares what Intel and AMD are doing.
No, but I do because I want to build a new computer.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying.
We'll talk about it later.
Yeah, that's a different episode probably. How's your M1 MacBook Pro going? I didn't realize you bought the Pro. I thought you got the Air. So
no. I mean, like, that's the Air is old. Like the Air, in fact, what is even.
Yeah, my wife wants a new laptop, and I told her she has to wait until the new Airs come out.
Yes,
it's 2 years old at this point.
And the 13-inch Pro is pretty old. Like what I bought was the 14-inch MacBook Pro because those the 14 and the 16 just debuted last fall.
And the 13-inch Pro is an Intel chip, and the 14-inch Pro is an M1?
No, 13-inch is the plain Jane M1.
Oh, okay.
The new Pros. So, I mean, even that is like, see, there's even division within the Pro line. The 13-inch is the old M1. The 14 and 16 are the new M1 Pro souped or Max.
Okay.
Depending on what you get. So I just got the M1 Pro in a 14-inch MacBook Pro.
Is that the base model?
I got the slight upgrade on the CPU and GPU cores.
Okay.
It's interesting, like, looking at the CPU on there and trying to decide. I mean, you know, I'm sure they try to simplify it for like a more mainstream audience on the sale page.
Yeah.
But when they ask you, hey, do you want the, I think it's 8-core versus 10-core CPU, and it's like a $200 upgrade. And you're like, do I really need to spend that much for two more cores? But what they don't specify is you're getting two more performance cores. You're not getting any more efficiency cores.
Oh, right. Because they have a, what is it, like 16 cores total, and half of them are slow.
Well, it depends on which model. Like the Ultra, it's the big dot little thing, right? So like,
they're
not the Ultra. I'm sorry, the Max. This is this is a lot. Pro, Max, Ultra.
Which ones? If I was rating those, I would put Pro above everything but Ultra. But it's not. That's not the way it works.
I believe
it's
the Max.
Max is the middle, right?
Pro, Max, yes. Max was the top. Max is now the middle. Now the Ultra is
sorry,
the top.
Max.
Anyway, I think the Max does go up to 16 cores. On the Pro only goes up to 10, which is the one I got. But yeah, okay. Like when I actually eyeballed it, I realized like, oh, you're actually getting like a third more of the good cores if you spend this money. It's not just two more cores out of 10. It's there's more performance there than, yeah. And I get why they don't go into that detail there, but I'm glad I looked.
So how is it? Are you liking it?
It's pretty awesome. It's a pretty goddamn good laptop. Like, I've had it for a little bit, but I was just kind of plinking at it around the house because I don't have a ton of need for a laptop here. But then I traveled and had to work for a week and a half on it. Amazing. Like, it's
how's like, I'm gonna jump straight to the thing I care about. How's the keyboard, Brad? Because so keyboards have been bad.
The keyboard is totally unremarkable, and I mean that in a good way.
That's perfect. Yeah, that's all I
it
want.
It absolutely just works. I haven't even thought about the keyboard. Let me put it that way. It
that's
feels
beautiful.
It feels great. It works fine. I'd never had any of the bad Apple keyboards. Like, I work issued me a 2013 MacBook Pro in like 2013.
Yeah, the last of the good ones.
And I used it for like basically until I left almost. Like, I like, so I never really touched any of the shitty keyboards, and I don't even know what actually is so bad about them.
Like, the problem was they were really low profile. So like the key press was very short, and they were, I would say, defective to the point that if any dust got underneath them, then the sensor just stopped working.
That seems like a pretty severe design flaw for a keyboard.
It was bad. It was a bad time.
Especially an embedded keyboard in a much more expensive device.
Yep. But, a device you have to completely disassemble to replace the keyboard. Yes.
I may have kind of just misrepresented my experience because literally the weekend before we went to work from home for the pandemic, they swapped out my work laptop at CBS and gave me the one with the full size touch bar.
Oh, yeah.
But again, I was at home, so I basically never used this laptop. But
yeah.
But like the little bit that I used it, I despised that touch bar. Oh, my God. Not having a physical escape key was just like I could not. I absolutely hated it.
I don't have any. I never bought one of those.
And then real quick, like they swapped that one out when the Red Ventures transition happened. They sent me one with a touch bar, but a physical escape key. And that
That was a big improvement.
That helped quite a bit because I realized like function keys, I pretty much still look down when I tap. Escape key, I very absentmindedly just like without looking go to the corner of the keyboard to exit out of things, and not having that anyway.
Does it have a fingerprint sensor?
Yes.
That's really nice.
It's fantastic. Yeah. Like the keyboard is super great. Like, yes, to unlock the keyboard or the computer after you open it, just like it's instantaneous, like almost as fast as I can open the laptop lid, it detects the fingerprint and just logs in.
Wait, it's the fingerprints. Where's the fingerprint sensor?
Up in the top right. It's also the power button.
Oh, except, so you flip it up and grab it on the way up.
Except there kind of is no power button because they are now just forcing when you open the laptop, it turns on and there's nothing.
So opening the laptop is the power button.
Yes, which I really don't love. And on the x86 ones that did that, there was a kind of a terminal command you could run that would disable that. Hmm. That apparently has gone away now. There's no way to turn that off, which I'm really not a fan of.
How would you use a button on the keyboard otherwise? Is that the thought?
To turn it on?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's how it was. Yeah. The power button was part of the keyboard.
Yeah. My ancient 13-inch Pro has a button on the keyboard.
Yeah. That's how my old one was. The only real situations where that is annoying is like sometimes like I want to open it and see if I left it on before I go to the airport, for example, but because of the way it works, opening it turns it on. So of course it's on. The other one is just like,
wait, you turn it off when you go to the airport all the way.
Yeah.
This seems like a device I would probably never turn all the way off.
So it's kind of less necessary with this one. Like in the past when battery life was not great, even in sleep, that's why I would turn it off. Cause it's like, I don't know when I'm going to turn this back on again. I want it to be at 100% when I do need it. But this one burns batteries so slowly in sleep that like, it kind of actually doesn't matter.
Yeah. So what has your battery life been like?
So in heavy usage, you'll still see a drop. Like it's not magic.
If I'm sitting, can you there do like 4 hours of video editing or
I haven't done anything that heavy yet. Like the most I've done with it is like recorded audio, like compressed some stuff. No video editing yet. Like, you know, just like running the backlight, like basic usage still burns battery. Like if I just sit there doing web and email stuff for a couple hours on the couch, it'll go down 10%.
Jesus, really? That's it?
Yes. Am I already that spoiled that I was like, oh, that sounds like a lot to me.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't be surprised because we should be expecting like iPad levels of battery life and performance here.
That's basically how it is. I mean, it's maybe 15%. Like
that's pretty good. Like so theoretically you could unplug your laptop in the morning, use it unplugged all day at an 8 hour, 10 hour workday and still have some battery left.
You could probably make it. I haven't tried that yet, but I would guess you could make it if you're not doing anything too heavy.
I would be curious.
Of course, even if you are, I mean, I think like the efficiency of that thing is such.
It seems like the backlight's the big thing. Yeah.
I would guess that just having the backlight up is probably is what's hitting the battery really hard there.
How's the screen?
It's amazing. Like it's
is it an LCD or an OLED?
It's LCD, but it's got, Hang on.
Is there a 10-bit thing?
No. It's the backlight. I can't believe I'm blanking on this.
The adaptive backlight?
Oh my God, this is killing me, Phil, while I find this.
Yeah. I guess the big question for me, I'm not going to engage in the thing about that. I'm going to make you bring up the notch, actually. Okay. How is the arm? I guess the big question is the arm stuff, because like we're 2 years into this transition, but it seems like it's going as slow as it always does. In that, I'm aware of at least a handful of things that I use on the day to day that still aren't supported.
Yeah,
and the way they've been supporting Rosetta, like the if you turn it on, you're stuck with it forever. Nature of Rosetta is
that how it was last time from PowerPC to x86?
I don't think you had a choice. I think it was just always, think it was always there.
Right.
Like, in that regard, I guess it's a little bit different. I don't feel like there wasn't a massive downside to having backwards compatibility on the old desktops, but also it was a time when we would you still had to reinstall OS X every once in a while, just like you still had to reinstall Windows every once in a while. And that thankfully seems to be a thing that is now in every 5-ish years, not an every year kind of situation for most people, even for hardcore users.
Yeah. So I have not installed Rosetta 2 yet. I kind of just like as a challenge to see if I can get away without it.
So what are you missing?
If it really came down to it, I would, but I just haven't absolutely been forced to yet.
But I'm curious how that stuff runs is the thing.
Well, so that's actually part of what stopped me is anecdotally reading a lot about x86. Like it absolutely hits the battery way harder. Like it's kind of not surprising, right? Is that it burns way more juice and runs much less efficiently. So that's part of the reason I've been trying to avoid it. But just about everything is there. I'm trying to think of like Audacity is not yet, but they said the next major version will be built for M1. Everything else pretty much, I will say this has introduced me to Discord Canary, which is the like alpha kind of rolling nightly kind of version of Discord.
Oh, wow.
Which is native, but is like literally every time I open it, it has to update. Like if I leave it running, it updates, I think literally every day.
Wow.
And it has a yellow icon instead of a purple one.
I don't know if I can handle that.
It's better than running an x86 version of Discord that's going to hit the battery harder.
I guess that's true. You could just run in the web browser, though.
True.
What about like Adobe stuff?
I haven't used any Adobe stuff on there.
DaVinci and Audacity, no. Blender, any of that stuff?
Like I said, Audacity is not there yet, but should be soon. Like Dropbox is there.
You were using GarageBand to record, I guess, when you were gone.
I was using GarageBand to record when I was out there. Like I downloaded Reaper. I downloaded the trial version of Reaper. That is native. But I took one look at Reaper and was like, this is probably a lot. This is overkill for just recording audio. Maybe I should find something simpler. As much as people love Reaper. A lot of apps are packaging universal binaries at this point, which is both. It's M1 and x86 code in the same.
Well, and theoretically, that I would assume that that'll transition at some point where they only give you the x86 or the M1 version from this when you're getting stuff from the store.
Yeah, that's possible.
What about the camera?
It's nice. It's 1080p, which I think may be new. I'm not sure. I mean, they made a big enough deal out of it being 1080p that I assume that's not common.
I'd assume it's just the one that's on the front of iPhones, right?
Probably. But yeah, I was using it when I was remote. I was using it to like appear on Nextlander streams and nobody complained about anything quality wise. So it seemed to be a good webcam. I was in meetings on the internal microphone on that thing, and people were like shocked at how good I sounded on that as well. Like, I don't think I would use the built-in microphone to record a podcast, but apparently it was like quite good for a built-in.
I think you were using that webcam for me to talk to you while you were recording on your real mic.
Yes.
And
so you've heard it. Yes.
Yeah. Like it didn't even sound very roomy, which was kind of surprising. Okay. Anything else? USB-C charging?
Oh yeah, they restored MagSafe. I think the 14 and 16 inch MacBook Pros are the first ones to have MagSafe again.
So it's not USB-C?
So it does both. It has I want to say three. Let me make sure. Yes, it's got three USB-C ports on it, and it will charge off of any of those.
Oh,
they're all like whatever the current Thunderbolt is. You know, the I mean, USB and Thunderbolt standards are insane, but they all do that data wise, but they also all will charge off of USB-C in a pinch.
And that means you can charge your other things off of them too, probably at a really insane speed.
I guess that's the case, but it also has, like I said, a dedicated MagSafe to USB-C cable that it comes with. So, and like MagSafe is as great as it ever was.
Is there, they put USB-A ports back on the Mac Studio, which I thought was lovely.
Yeah, this does not have that.
You don't have USB-A. No,
you definitely still need dongle. To carry USB-A adapters around. It's got that
dongle life.
So it's three USB-C, one headphone jack, one HDMI port, and the SD card reader.
Oh, the SD card reader is back. Yeah. Okay.
So it's like pretty capable port wise. Like they brought back a lot of the good stuff. That was another thing with those work laptops I had. I had one that was USB-C only and nothing else. And that was a nightmare.
Yeah, there was one period there. It might have only been the Airs, but like you got like one USB-C port and that was it, which seemed ill-advised.
Yes. What I'm sorry. I have to circle back to the screen because I had a massive brain fart. It's early here.
Oh, yeah.
Mini LED.
Oh, right.
Is what the screen is.
Lots and lots of LEDs to make the backlight turn on and off.
Kind of a dense, like quasi high resolution field of LEDs that attempts to match the
darkness
screen image. Yeah. So,
yeah.
So like the blacks are very good, like it's an LCD, but, and also it's ProMotion. It's got high refresh.
Yeah.
But I believe it's adaptive.
Yeah. That's the way they're doing it now. I think they're going to do that on the iPad too.
It's not straight 120 Hertz constantly. It kind of oscillates depending on what you're doing.
Okay, so here's the big question for me, because like my partner's in a new laptop situation, and we've been having the do you want a laptop or do you want an iPad conversation, because like they're essentially the same hardware, right? Like you're looking at more or less the same price, but one is something you can also kind of use on the couch to browse content, and the other one is a thing with a keyboard and mouse.
Man.
That's and like it's really unclear. Like this has been an easy decision up until this point, right? And I honestly don't know what to do. We're just going to get her whatever she wants.
The lines are kind of blurring. Did I see that there are M1s in iPads now? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's it.
That's crazy. Yeah. I did not realize that.
Yeah. So if you get an iPad, I mean, it depends on which one you get, but if you get one of the low, even the mid-range iPad Pros are the same basic hardware as in the Air MacBook Airs. So it's a weird time. I'm curious what people think about that. So if you have feedback,
would you potentially be looking at a 13 inch iPad if you went the iPad route for
probably
that?
the 10 inch would be my guess. 10. The small Pro
that still pairs with the keyboard nicely. Like that might be the better of two worlds.
Well, yeah. And they're like their keyboards have trackpads and everything now. Right. It's not like you have to touch the screen like some sort of heathen.
Yeah. I never got around to trying Sidecar. I meant to while I was out there. Sidecar is the thing that basically turns an iPad into a second monitor.
Yeah. It's wildly dependent on your Wi-Fi capabilities, my understanding.
I'm sure.
So, yeah. Okay. You have a big thing. It's all caps. I hesitate to engage with this.
I don't need to spend a lot of time on it. I just have to close the loop here.
How's the notch, Brad?
Look, it's due diligence. Okay.
Okay. How is your notch neuroses? That's my question.
Top notch basically blacks out the menu bar. Like all it actually does is edits your wallpaper to add a black strip at the top.
Wow.
To make the menu bar completely black, basically because the notch bleeds into the bezel, like you just can't see it. Like it's literally invisible. I don't even know it's there unless I move the arrow up and notice that it disappears in the middle of the screen.
Placebo effect.
It's total. Well, I mean, look, I just don't have to look at it, so I don't care about it anymore. But it really makes me wonder, like, why didn't they just build a black menu bar option into macOS for this thing?
I mean, why would Apple ever give people the thing that they want out of their computers? This is not a thing that they do.
I guess there is a long, long tradition of people making little applets to fix annoying UI things on macOS, right?
Yeah. I'm glad you're able to. It's funny because like for me, I would never sacrifice pixels, but I get it. It's fine.
It's just an aesthetic thing. I just hate the way it looks. And now that I can't see it, I don't care.
I like the white bezels on these new MacBooks.
Oh, no.
These rumored MacBooks.
So, yeah, part and parcel with the M2 rumors, the next MacBook Air that is supposed to have the M2 is now being rumored to have a white notch.
I wonder if it's going to be plastic again.
That's a good question. Probably not.
Shiny white plastic, man. It's going to be the white aluminum, I bet, that they do the phones in.
Well, yeah, they haven't made plastic laptops in forever, have they?
No, but it's going to be the white aluminum like my phone or the white glass.
Maybe. Anyway, yeah, that's going to be harder to hide because obviously there's going to be a seam between
that
and the screen. Anyway, I am happy enough with.
You can deal with it.
The rest of the laptop is so damn good that I kind of don't care.
See, this is why you should just get an iPhone 13. You can learn to love the notch. Think about how good your face is going to look on those next Lander streams.
So how are those new AirPods?
So these are actually the old AirPods. I had been holding out, trying to wait for AirPod 2 Pro 2s for a really long time. Cause I bought a pair of, original AirPods on a trip one time because my headphones had an accident while I was away, and I was taking, like, I ended up using them like old school Bluetooth headsets, cause I used them to take calls. When I was doing a lot of phone work before I was into the Teams and Zoom life. And I had them for long enough that the battery conked out and I needed a new pair of headphones. So the AirPod Pros went on sale or just after Christmas for like $80 off. And I was like, this seems like a good price. I'll try these. I wish I had bought them years and years ago. The sound quality is well documented as fine, like air quotes fine. It's not great. It's not bad. It's all the normal stuff about Beats and Apple headphones and that they overemphasize bass and all that stuff. But there's an incredible convenience as somebody who listens to a lot of podcasts and listens to a lot of spoken audio, and then also has a lot of like no lyrics or music on in the background when I'm doing work that can't have, like, I don't know about you, but if I'm writing something, I absolutely can't have words in the background or else I just start typing whatever the lyrics are.
100% me.
Yeah. So the noise can't, like, I've had noise canceling headphones before, starting with like pink noise generating headphones from the late 90s all the way through like Bose, you know, quiet comfort canceling headphones. There's two things. One is that this is the first pair of Apple headphones that have actually fit me and stayed in my ears. The AirPods always were a little flappy in a way that didn't ever feel quite right. Because these have the little plastic tip, they stay in really nicely and they isolate. But then they also do the noise cancellation too, where they're, you know, taking audio in and then generating opposed sound waves. So you basically get nothing through or very little through. And like, it's the noise canceling bit works so well that like, if I want to go take a nap and I live in a small house, it's loud. I have a 9-year-old. Like, there's always noise. I just put the headphones in and put on some like chill ambient beats on an incredibly low volume. And like, I don't hear anything. I can just go right to sleep. It's amazing.
Fall asleep to Beats?
Like, you don't listen to the ambient beats?
I have a white noise app that has things like campfire crackling and waterfall and like rain on a tin roof.
So I can't, I have enough tinnitus that like a lot of the white noise stuff just makes it worse. So it also does the transparent, like you squeeze the stem to switch it from noise canceling to transparency mode.
Wait, is there any tactile feedback in that? Or are you literally squeezing hard plastic? Okay.
No. So there's like a little, unlike the AirPods, there's like a little, I don't know if you can see it, but there's a flat, you're not going to be able to see that. There's a flat spot on it that is like squishy. And when you squeeze the squishy spot, it changes modes. I mean, you can set it to be any number of things. I think you can trigger like a shortcut with it if you want. But you can hard press, squeeze to switch it from noise canceling to transparency. Transparency just uses the microphone and pipes in the audio from around the world. So if somebody comes up to you and wants to talk to you, then you can. There's also just like off, which makes the batteries last a little bit longer, which is, and just uses the isolating kind of nature of the blocking your ear canal. I don't notice that. I know a lot of times with the noise canceling stuff, people notice sucking on their ears, like a sucking sensation. I haven't had any of that.
Interesting.
It seems to be piped through enough that you don't get that.
That sounds terrible. That's gross.
It's not something I've experienced with these headphones. They're small enough in your ear that like you can, like I can lay on a soft pillow with my ear down and I'm not uncomfortable, which is nice. And the thing that I like about them the best is that I can pipe audio to them from any device in the house pretty much at this point. So they're connected to my phone, all the Apple TVs in the house. If I want to, like Gina and I, my daughter was in the living room in a fort having a camp out while we were playing board games last weekend and we were listening to music. So I held her AirPods next to my phone and we were able to both listen to the same thing off of the same phone.
Like that's how you like sync them or change device.
Yeah. You hit share in your music app and it's like, hey, here you go.
That's ridiculous. That's kind of like that. Did you see that viral video going around recently of the like pinch and swipe from phone to iPad, like copy and paste? I think they've had this for years. I think the gesture might be new. That you can basically on one device, you can like pinch the screen and then kind of like unpinch on the other one. It'll copy paste across the cloud.
Bonkers.
Which, like, again, the tech has been there for a while, but the natural gesture is what makes it kind of magical looking.
Well, and the thing about this stuff is it's pretty seamless. Like the new control interface for people that have Apple TVs and HomePods and all that stuff in their house works really well and lets you switch from one device to another really seamlessly in a way that like has been fiddly before. And also doesn't require you to open up the app on the other end. Like if you're switching from the Apple TV in one room to the Apple TV in another room, you literally just open up the thing for the Apple TV in the other room. You're like, hey, play this thing in here that you're playing in the other room. And it picks it up where you left off without me having to know I have to open the HBO app or whatever on the other side. But you can also pipe audio from any of the devices into the AirPods when you're on your phone or whatever. It switches between the watch, between the TV, between the PC, like it even switches between the PC pretty seamlessly. I have to connect and disconnect on the Bluetooth app on Windows 11, but it's like it's no more clicks than it is on any other Bluetooth headset. That's, basically,
that's pretty impressive. I have to say, I know you're not going to get the same level of integration, but the fact that they've rolled out at least some of their basic services to non-Apple devices, I think, is like kind of a mind-blowing development. I know it happened a while ago, but like our Roku Ultra is now an AirPlay target, and it can act as a HomePod, like home, whatever they call the thing that manages all your home devices.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Previously, when they rolled that stuff out, you either had to buy a HomePod or you could use an iPad for it.
Or an Apple TV.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And all of those, I only had an iPad. So my iPad was the kind of home controller or whatever you would call it. It murdered the battery on that thing. Like, oh my God. Like you don't.
Oh, understand. Yeah.
It would drop 50% in a day just in sleep. Like it was terrible. So you can use like something like a Roku now to like be your home hub thing, which
your home kit controller. That's interesting.
You're not going to get all the cool like device switching stuff you're talking about necessarily with that, but like it's still Steve Jobs never would have allowed it.
Well, I actually do because our so it's all of the new generation AirPlay targets show up in this stuff. So my I have an app called Air Server that doesn't show up. Our Roku is a Roku 3, which was old. And supports the like two generations ago AirPlay API or interface.
Is it screen mirror?
Yeah, it's the screen mirror kind, not the.
But even that is hugely valuable, right? Like we're not like opposed to an Apple TV. We ended up with a Roku.
Yeah.
Through circumstances. And since that's what we already had, like the fact that I can mirror my iPad to a Roku now and not need an Apple TV, like it's just kind of like the walls around one particular walled garden finally fell down and it's kind of nice.
Definitely. Well, it's good that other people are talking to that. And like, if you have a TV that has one of the newer Apple TV AirPlay implementations, it should work with this as well.
Yeah.
The stupidest feature of the AirPods is the spatial audio stuff.
So yeah. What is that? I've heard hushed whispers about this.
They have the UWC chips that let them spatially track where they are in your 3D space in relation to another object like your phone.
Okay.
So you can turn it on. Like they, if you have Apple Music, then there's a bunch of spatial audio things that basically give you like, it's basically like the Dolby Digital 5.1 of music. So you can like turn your head and it sounds like you're at a concert instead of listening to something on a stereo album. That's stupid.
That's weird.
It's not good. I don't like it. Yeah. It creeps me out because I'm walking around the house and things sound different. It's not what I want. But you can do it with movies when it's hooked up to the Apple TV.
Okay.
So when I'm sitting on the couch and I have my headphones on, I don't want to have the house loud and bother everybody with whatever I'm watching too loud. Probably I can put in the AirPods. I can set it to spatial audio and it sounds like I have a 5.1 set up in the living room. And I turn my head and it sounds like the torpedo is going behind me or whatever.
Wow.
And it actually works.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. It's very cool.
That's pretty neat.
And it also works. It doesn't just work with Apple stuff like Apple stuff traditionally does. If you have like my Plex server has a bunch of movies that are ripped with 5.1 audio, they all play. So, you know, Netflix and HBO and all that stuff works. It's very cool.
That's awesome. That's cool. I might have to take a look at the next version of AirPods that come out.
It's important to say these are the pros, and I think the threes maybe get spatial audio too, but okay, not the twos and the originals. Okay. So
kind of a tangent here, but I've been thinking about noise canceling headphones again now that I'm back to having to travel some.
Yeah.
Because I've been like a staunch, like I cannot fly without noise canceling headphones for like 10 years or more. And I did not realize until I started looking around how much the AirPod and AirPod-like category has like subsumed the old noise canceling headphone market. Like that's what there is now. You know, like back in the day, it was like, oh, there was the Bose Quiet Comfort. And there was like, it was a whole separate category of product for noise canceling for travelers.
But it's just built into everything at the high end now.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like, yeah, now noise canceling is just a thing in like all these things that most people just buy to like wear around the city and stuff.
Yeah. Well, and the real benefit of the noise canceling is that I listen to stuff at a much lower volume than I do. Like, the volume that I listen to stuff on the AirPods Pro versus the volume I listen to stuff on the AirPods is incredible. Huh. Like it's so much lower now.
Interesting.
Because it filters out a lot of the background noise. We have a couple minutes left. We're running a little bit late here. I want to talk about the watch little bit because I got a watch for Christmas. It's such a weird, like if you'd asked me 2 months ago how I felt about it, I would probably tell you it's a thing that's designed to make me feel good, but really do nothing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a part cyber nag, part nanny, part cheerleader. It's pretty useful in retrospect. Yep. Like having used it more, I've started doing some of the things it tells you to do. Like, for example, at the start of the day and at the end of the day, and anytime it notices your heart rate goes up, but you're not really moving, it's like, hey man, you could take a minute and meditate and you'll feel better.
Huh. Wow. That's oddly specific.
Man, I've started doing it. I feel better. It makes me feel like I do a minute of deep breathing. I'm like, dude, you know what? I do feel better.
Everybody should meditate. It's hugely effective.
Yeah.
Can you turn all that stuff off? Like, I'm not saying you should, but
you can turn everything off.
Oh, they do give you the option.
So, yeah, because there are definitely some like bad notifications that are annoying. Like there's if you're in some place that the volume of this is, just to be clear, this is on the Apple Watch 7. I haven't tried any of the other ones. If you're in a room that's too loud, it'll pop a notification and be like, hey, if you stay here for more than like 30 minutes, you risk permanent hearing damage. What? Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Man, if you're listening to music on your headphones too loud, it'll be like, hey, man, you should turn it down. You're going to hurt yourself.
Did you actually make yours say, hey, man?
No, it doesn't. Can you customize the
personality of your watch the way you can Siri?
No, that would be nice. Wait, you can make Siri say, hey, man.
No, I'm sorry. Not the personality, but the you can set like gender and accent and stuff for Siri. Yeah, they give you a bunch of options for,
you know, you can't, I can't, I look, can't, if I could get my Apple Watch to be Brody from the 1988 Point Break.
Absolutely going to make,
hey, bro,
Apple Watch into a like chill surfer, bro.
You jack in your ears. You should turn it down. The exercise rings are nice. Cause like at the end of the day, it prompts you and is like, hey, yeah, I noticed you haven't done anything today. If you went for a walk, you'd fill your ring and you'd feel better.
Yeah, my partner uses that on her very old Apple Watch. We'll get to that. But like, yeah, the activity stuff seems incredibly useful.
Yeah, I wish that you could set it to do that prompt earlier because it would hit me in the winter. In the wintertime, it hits me during mountain lion, like prime mountain lion hours, which is a real problem in my neighborhood right now.
Hey, bro, there are a lot of mountain lions around. You might not want to go for a walk right now.
You know, they don't have a mountain lion warning right now. They should get that.
Yeah.
I think the experience you're going to have with this is dramatically different if you manage your notifications well or if you don't. Like if your phone beeps 3,000 times a day, the watch is going to break you and make your mental health bad.
No.
And the other thing is the creepy Siri stuff. Like, I don't know if you use that widget, the new widget that's the Siri one that's like, hey, here's some stuff you like to do at this particular time of day.
No, I do not.
That one's so good. Oh. And there's a watch face that does that I use during work because it knows that like at 10 o'clock I play test every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. And like I often will listen to music in the afternoons on Tuesdays and Thursdays because that's when I do writing stuff.
Interesting.
And,
like,
yeah.
That's cool.
There are a pretty good number of bad notifications. The hand washing thing is fucking stupid.
Okay.
When it detects you washing your hands, this is one you have to turn on. This is like they're working on this one still. When it detects you washing your hands by the microphone and the movement of your hands on your wrist, it's like, hey, you know, 20 seconds of hand washing is much better, much more effective than anything less than And it has a countdown and it like beeps you on your wrist when it's done.
Hey, you should sing happy birthday twice before you finish washing your hands.
It's so annoying. I turned that one off almost immediately.
That is a bit like I use this phrase somewhat flippantly, but that is a bit nanny state watch.
It is.
All this other stuff sounds rad, but that seems like maybe a little bit much.
So, like just to be clear, a lot of the stuff sounds rad is still that quantized life bullshit that is like, I don't know if that's good for you or not. It feels nice.
Sure. I will say the one thing is the meditation and the exercise stuff is something that I certainly, and I bet most people actually really should be encouraged to do more.
Yeah, the meditation, like when I get pissed off about something, the meditation app pops up after about 5 minutes. Like, hey, you should think about this. Might be a good time to meditate.
In all seriousness, like I have to remind myself, like as effective as I know it to be, like I often forget, or like if I'm already too annoyed or flustered or nervous, I don't think about doing it. Like having somebody, a third party, say, hey, by the way, remember, do this. Like that's super helpful.
Well, and the way the meditation app works is it doesn't. You can do it without having to have headphones on or anything, because it gives you the breathing cues in the taptic sensor, which is which is really nice.
That's cool.
And it makes you do it faster than I do normally, which makes it like makes me feel better at the end. I think
this is really interesting to hear. I know you got maybe a little more to touch on here, but like I've wanted an Apple Watch for years. And when the Series 7 came out, I was like, oh, that looks like the one. I should get that. But we're deep in the throes of work from home. And I was like, well, I never leave the house. Do I really need a watch? So I skipped it. But like, this is sounding like much more of a kind of lifestyle guide than just a watch that I can see how it's still useful at home.
It's gross. I feel gross saying this, but that's a pretty good description. Yeah. Huh. Like I mean, it's nice for the notifications, because I'm less likely to miss the notifications that are actually important. Like when Gina texts me, then I get a notification. It gives me a special bump on my wrist and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. I can ignore that one, or that's important. The responses and the voice recognition and stuff on that kind of stuff are good enough that I bought the cellular model so that I can flip on cellular at some point when I do start leaving the house again. But I haven't bothered to turn that on yet. Just generally speaking, the battery life is good enough that I don't worry about charging it every night. I charge it like, I don't know, every day and a half or 2 days.
Big. I feel like that's like a major milestone, right? Because you always heard previously, like the old models, it was like, oh, I can just barely get through my day and then I have to charge it when I get home. But like a watch that can make it more than 24 hours feels like a big step.
Well, so it doesn't make it more than 24 hours. It makes it it's probably good for 18, but I also have the screen on the always on setting. So it like never turns off.
Yeah, that is one of the big things that really pushed me toward actually getting one, was the always on thing.
Yeah, that was the big one for me.
There's like an interesting sociological thing I read about the old one, which was that like you really had to like flick your wrists. Like people interpret you looking at your wrist as like, oh, I am boring you. Like you would rather be somewhere else kind of thing.
Having had one of the Series Zeros, it made people feel bad when you would check your watch.
So like having to do that motion just to make the watch come on seemed pretty limiting.
Yeah.
So just having the always on face for that reason seems like a big deal.
It's a much more humane device. I wear it to sleep. It does the sleep tracking thing. So it tells me when I fall asleep and how long I'm sleeping and all that. My sleep is a nightmare. So that's the thing I learned from that.
Do you know, is it just detecting tossing and turning motion stuff, or can it read blood ox?
It reads blood ox.
It does. Wow.
It tracks blood ox while you're sleeping. It tracks your heart rate while you're sleeping.
That seems like all of those together might be enough to like detect like apnea and stuff like that.
They don't detect. I don't believe that they say they detect apnea.
That's probably a bridge too far for them. There might even be like liability stuff there for them to like, try to make those guesses.
Yeah. The medical, like the blood ox is interesting in the time of Rona, when blood ox is a thing that all of us are probably, who are concerned about stuff, are using that as a first line of knowing, hey, how are you doing? The ECG, I think is what it is. ECG is the will detect atrial fibrillations, but that's it. It doesn't do anything else. It doesn't. It explicitly says, yo, we're not going to detect heart attacks. You should go to the doctor if you think you're having a heart attack. You can unlock the phone with your watch on.
Huh?
Like the watch, like if you I keep my phone in my left pocket. I use it in my left hand most of the time. My watch is on my left hand. If they're close enough to each other, the phone will unlock the watch, and the watch will unlock the phone if one or the other is unlocked. I sleep with it on. The sleep tracking stuff has been interesting. The default Apple sleep tracking isn't that good. I ended up actually paying $20 for this other sleep tracking app that does a little more involved stuff that I think might be bullshit. I don't know. It's like weird quantitized life stuff. The best thing that I've done is I set up shortcuts to turn app pages on the phone on and off. And it also switches the app faces based on my work schedule. So like at 10 o'clock, I get my work watch face on with all the calendar shit. And then at 5 o'clock that turns off and it's just a normal, like, hey, here's some numbers and some stuff like that.
Man, that's cool.
And you can do third party complications. So I have an internet time, Swatch internet time. I always know how many beats it is.
I bet brainstorming new features for this thing is a lot of fun.
It's 727 beats right now.
Good to know.
And also, like, the integration stuff, like the Apple TV, when you're watching something on the Apple TV, the remote's on your watch and you don't have to grab your phone, whatever. Cool. It's all good.
That's very cool.
So I guess that's it for us today.
Yeah, this is just a grab bag of, I mean, I promise we use things that are not Apple as well, but.
But we haven't talked about it in a long time.
Yeah.
And there was a new stuff that is interesting and
a lot of hands on.
I wanted to use the watch and the AirPods and stuff for a while because they integrate in your life in weird and non-obvious ways.
Yeah.
Thanks everybody for listening. Yeah. As always, the TechPod is 100% listener supported show. So if you would like to help out with the listener supporting part of that show, mm-hmm. you can do that by going to patreon.com/techpod. Again, it's patreon.com/techpod, and you can become one of the fabulous TechPod supporters and part of the TechPod Discord.
That's right. You can see all kinds of cool stuff happening. Like, I've witnessed a real live, honest to God Emacs versus Vim conversation yesterday.
Was it a debate?
No, it was pretty, let's say, a polite, spirited debate.
Did anyone change their mind?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I might check out Emacs, though.
Emacs is pretty good. I used Emacs for a long time.
I also appreciate Vim.
Yeah. Look, there's a place for everything in the TechPod Discord. Right. Place for everyone. Even the Vim weirdos have a home.
Oh, I get it.
If you would like to join, again, it's patreon.com/techpod. We have like 3,000 awesome people in there. So there's people that share your interests, and it is a good place to hang out and spend time with friends.
Tons to learn as well.
I'm excited about the end of Rona now that that's apparently done. So maybe we can do some in-person meetups at some point, because I would love to meet some people that I've been talking to for years now in person.
I started to ask it's done, but let's just move on.
I was being facetious.
Okay, I wasn't. You can never tell these days.
Yeah. Sorry. I should have put a / S at the end of that one.
You can never tell who's crossed over.
This is the part of the show where we thank our fabulous TechPod executive producer tier patrons, including Paddle Creek Games Makers Fractured Veil, Andrew Slosky, Bunny Thorpe Octocrimes. Oh no, that's where we go. Okay, keep going. Wedge, Jacob Chappell, Joel Krauska, Tarnished Twinkie. I think that's an Elden Ring reference.
That's a good one.
David Allen and James Kamek, thank you all so much. Yes, we really appreciate you
for sure.
And we will see everybody next week.